This is Kathy Staley again on February 23rd, 2010 with Kelly Gentry, and we're here to talk about your various activities. Can you start with saying your name, age, birth county, and residency?
Current residency?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm Kelly Gentry. I'm 20, almost 21, and I was born in Surrey County, but grew up in Wells County, and I now live in Watauga.
All right. And so you spent your entire K through 12 experience in Wilkes County?
Yes.
Okay. Could you first talk about how you learned about homosexuality? And I use homosexuality.
I like that word. Gosh, you know, that's a tough question. I don't ever remember learning about it. The first memory I have of really considering it and thinking about it is, ironically, I was at Sunday school, and our preacher let us open it up that day. Usually they have like a specific thing they want to talk about, but that day they opened it up to questions, and my best friend in the church, Hannah, asked, what should we think or say about these girls that go out to these parties and make out with each other? And I was just like, what? Girls do that? And I'm like, that's the silliest question ever. But then everybody else was like, oh, yeah, is that bad? You know, like asking them, you know, the ethics of it, I guess. And I went home and asked my sister about it. I'm like, because she was in high school. I was younger.
What age were you? Middle school?
Middle school sometime, yeah. Let's see, I was in 7th grade when my sister was a senior, so that's probably around when it was. And so I was like, Julie, is it true that girls will go out to parties and get drunk and make out with each other? And she was like, well, yeah, I mean, I've known girls to do that. And I'm like, why? Like, really? Like, who do you know? Like, I had all these questions. Like, I remember specifically just being like amazed that girls did that. And actually, I'm ashamed to say that it was almost not curiosity, but I guess I just thought that I needed to be angry towards people that were doing that. And I was like, well, I think it's wrong. Whoever's doing that, they shouldn't do that, you know? But that was just what was drilled in my head, so.
What did the minister respond?
Yeah, it's the funny thing is I don't even remember what he said. I think I was just still processing the idea in my mind that somebody my age knew of this happening even. I have no idea what he said. I can't remember.
And then as you grew up, did you hear about it more and more? Because you were in middle school when Ellen DeGeneres had come out, and there was a lot of increased media during that time period.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I didn't really watch a lot of TV. So I don't remember Ellen coming out at all. Actually, I don't remember much of Ellen until Finding Nemo. I guess it came up from time to time. I know I can think of times when my dad would say derogatory things, not about lesbians, but about gay men.
Mm-hmm.
He would use the word flamer. I don't think I ever remember him saying faggot, though. I really don't think he's ever said that, but he would say flamers or those queers. Those queers. Yeah, that was probably his choice term for gay guys, but didn't mention much about lesbians. I do remember one time, my best friend, Ira, he was kind of like a punk kind of kid in middle school, and he had these really cool army pants that he bought from a surplus store and had, like, wrote things all over them and, like, drew peace signs and, like, put patches on them and stuff, and I really wanted some. So I begged my dad to take me to the army surplus store to buy some army pants, and he called me a dyke, and I was like, what? No, I'm not. I just want to be cool. Like, I didn't, I was kind of mad at him for saying that, but kind of for the wrong reasons. I thought he was just insulting me. I'd never really thought about me being, you know, that person before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
could you describe your coming out process?
Oh gosh, it is definitely a process, a very long process. And I feel like every day I come out a little more, like, you know, I mean, for my parents just to know that I'm gay, there's a lot more to it than that. Like, I mean, they don't know that, you know, they don't know, for example, that me and my girlfriend won't be able to see each other in the hospital. You know, they don't know the rules, the laws and stuff. So I feel like every chance I get to inform them about something related to being gay is another step in coming out. But I guess it all started in high school. Where do I start? There was a girl on my soccer team who was openly a lesbian. She had moved to another high school and come out there and then come back to our high school. And it was a big deal when she was coming back. Oh, Selena's coming back. And I was like, what's the big deal with that? She's a great soccer player. We're going to be awesome again. And I remember this one girl in my girls chorus class who was in my soccer team. She was, you know, blonde and pretty and whatever. And she was like, well, I don't want that lesbian on our team. As a lesbian, like, oh, okay, I mean, I think she's cool, whatever. And then she came back, and we, I guess I always kind of had a soft spot for people that were outcast anyway. Like, all of my friends were, like, alternative people anyway, and so I started hanging out with her because I kind of felt bad for her, and I just realized that we had a lot more in common than I had first recognized, and she started talking about, like, her feelings with the girl she had dated and how she had felt with guys before. She just, like, felt nothing with them. And I was like, God, that sounds so familiar. So I guess that was when I started to put the word lesbian beside my name. And I remember in that time, I was 15, sitting in front of my mirror in the bathroom and trying to look myself in the eye and saying, you're a lesbian, Kelly, you're a lesbian. And at first, especially that word lesbian, for some reason I couldn't say. At first I would be like, I like girls, or and then I could say, I'm gay. And then finally I worked all the way up to, you're a lesbian, Kelly, you know, saying that I'm a lesbian. And once I got that down, I started saying it to people. And I kind of liked Selena for a little while, but it didn't really work out because we were just too good friends. And then I met another girl. And in our relationship, I was outed a lot, more than I even noticed. People were talking about me, I didn't know. And if they had asked me, I probably would have told them. I guess at the time I considered myself bisexual because there were some guys that I still cared about a lot. But it took me a while to realize that just because I cared about them doesn't mean I want to sleep with them. So I wasn't so sure of myself, but people knew somehow. People would talk about it, and people who knew that they were gay or lesbian in my high school would come up to me and come out to me all the time. And I'm like, well, how would they know to come out to me? I don't know. I guess it was just, I was kind of oblivious.
How large was your high school, and how many people are you talking about coming out to you?
Yeah, I went to a very, very small high school. I think there were 110 in my graduating class. And I know we weren't the biggest class. I think the class below us was a little bit bigger, but not a whole lot bigger. So, you know, like 500 people, I guess, in our whole high school. So it's like, you know, everybody. And, I mean, half of my Facebook now, it's like I'm Facebook friends with everybody for my whole high school time. So it's like, I mean, everybody knows. You can't escape it.
Mm-hmm. And first of all, you went to East Wilkes High School, which that's Rhonda, right?
Yeah. East is in Rhonda, and, very rural. It's like 10 minutes from Elgin and like 30 minutes from Wilkesboro. It was just kind of nothing else around East Wilkes.
Right. How would you describe the overall attitudes of the teachers and the students? People were talking about you, but how were they talking about you?
That's an interesting question, especially with the teachers. Because around that time, I was so oblivious, you know. I didn't know really what was going on around me, but I did notice around that time that my relationship with my girlfriend was coming out to people. I noticed that teachers that were close to me before started kind of pushing me away a little bit, and then others that were nice to me before started taking me under their wing, and I feel like there's this whole other story that I don't even know about happening with the teachers, because teachers that I could go to talk to from freshman year on, like, they were kind of cold with me in my senior year especially, and I can't think of any other reason why it would be than me being gay. And there was one teacher, I mean, I won't say who she is or anything, obviously, but she was rumored to be a lesbian, and I was very close with her, even through my senior year, we stayed close, but I remember feeling really frustrated with her that she didn't reach out to me. I was like, why doesn't she ask me what I'm going through? I know she knows, you know, and I think I might have taken some anger out on her on accident, because I was just frustrated with not being able to talk to her, because I felt that we had the same problems, and she couldn't be out at our school, and neither could I, really. So that's kind of how it was with the teachers. With the students, some of them, like, I guess some of them didn't believe it or something, because still it would happen that girls would get jealous if I hung out with their boyfriends, and it was just, I guess maybe it's kind of a sign of the times, you know, because it happens, it's almost a trend, you know, for young girls to make out with other girls or say that they're bisexual and stuff, and so I think reactions were really mixed. Some people just didn't care, and some people just thought it was just me being a wild party girl. Mm-hmm. And so there were a few people that I think responded negatively, but didn't really say anything to me about it. And those were people that I wasn't friends with anyway, because I knew how they were with other kids for, you know, anything. At my school, we had one girl that dressed like gothic, you know, black and chains and all that, and she was the sweetest girl that I knew. We were really good friends, and I could see from watching her who I wanted to be friends with and who I didn't, because of how people reacted to that. And so if people were saying stuff about me bad, then I didn't hear it because I didn't hang around them.
Did you have anyone in the school come up to you? How many were there? And did y'all form like a friendship group?
Oh, definitely, yeah. My closest friends, like, and especially the ones I still am in contact with, we all have some kind of like weird outcast thing going on anyway. And so our numbers would grow as people came out, if you put it that way. And I mean, not all of my core friends are gay from my high school, but all of them are very open. They're straight but not narrow, if you will. Mm-hmm. They're very open to it, and I don't know the exact number, but it would take me a minute to sit here and count, but at least five, somewhere probably between 5 and 10, which is a lot for a small high school. People have come out to me since my senior year until now from my high school.
Okay. Was there pretty much acceptance and lack of epithets being thrown at people, or was there stuff like that going on in the halls and in the buses?
the only time that I remember anything really happening like that was there was this one guy. That one guy, and he, ironically, was my closest neighbor. But that's not saying much. He was still a mile away, so we weren't that close. But we had grown up together. It was a point since kindergarten. We were the same bus and everything. And I remember during my senior year walking down the hall with my girlfriend, and he muttered something under his breath and looked at us, and his little redneck boys with him were laughing. I don't know what he said, but it was obvious to me that it was about me and my girlfriend's relationship. But I just kind of blew it off, you know. I was just like, whatever, you know, he's just a stupid redneck, I don't care. That was really the only really direct thing. I think it was harder for my girlfriend because she was not as accepting of herself as I was. I could just brush it off, but for her, it was hard that people were talking about us. And it was interesting, her aunt was a hairdresser, and in a small town, you know, there's not that many hairdressers. Everybody goes to the same one, and you know what happens. You sit down in the chair, and they start messing with your hair, and they ask you about what, you know, what's the new gossip. And so her aunt was hearing all this stuff about us, you know, people were bringing it up. Isn't that girl your niece? You know, what is she hanging out with that Kelly girl for? So that was hard because I guess we found out in such a roundabout way that people were talking about us, you know, because it was her, people told her aunt, and then her aunt told her mom, and then her mom talked to us, and we were like, huh? You know, we, like, that was kind of, we didn't realize we were doing anything bad until that moment, or bad, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so no really directly, like, mean, hateful things have happened, but just people just running their mouths was the biggest problem for us.
How did your families respond when you finally told them?
Okay, that's a big question. And my family and her family is very, very, very different. Just first, their backgrounds are very different. I mean, my parents, you know, they went on to college. My mom got her master's degree. They're just more educated and I guess open-minded compared to them kind of family. Her family was terrible. And at first, they just thought that I was the greatest thing in the world because she'd gotten sick and she had to get her tonsils taken out. And I was just, you know, head over heels. And I'm like, you know, everything has to stop because the person I care about is sick. And I skipped school to go with her to the hospital. And then, you know, the next few days, as soon as I got out of school, I would be at her house and I would stay there all night, you know, getting her everything that she wanted. And her parents just thought I was so great because I did that. And then I could tell all of a sudden there was this big shift with her parents and how they treated me. Because for a long time, I would be at their house more than my own house. And they loved it. And they, you know, I played with her little brother and sister and they loved me and it was really great. And then all of a sudden, like, they were really cold with me and they would question me a lot. Asked me all these really weird questions about my religion and my upbringing and what my parents are like, and I'm like, you know, I've never done this before, I don't know. And then I guess my girlfriend figured out what was going on, and she warned me that they must have found out about what we're doing, and she was scared. She had a right to be, because not too long after that, I was at their house, and her dad called me out to his garage. Just me and him. And I get out there, and, like, he's a good old boy in every sense of the word, and, you know, he had his country music blasting, and he had his gun, like, laying out. You know, he wasn't holding it or anything, but it was in plain sight between us, and drinking his beer, you know, and he proceeds to tell me this story about his past, and, you know, he'd been in a lot of trouble in his past, and he told me one night he had got out and he was partying too hard, and this guy said something to him, and he didn't even know what it was that he said, but it really set him off, and he got in a fight with this guy, and he does not know to this day if that guy lived through that night. That's what he said to me, and I was like, huh, that's interesting, good story. And then he's like, now I want to ask you something, and this is really serious, and you better tell me the truth. Are you dating my daughter? And I was like, no. What? I was like, that's ridiculous. What? And so it was a little scary because he was obviously threatening me. And her mom just really didn't want to talk about it to me. She didn't ever like directly talk about it to me, but it was just in the way that she treated, the difference in the way that she treated me, that it was obvious that she was not happy about it. And that was, I can honestly say that her parents were the demise of our relationship, because it was just, they were just over the top. I was afraid of them. So was my girlfriend. She was scared to death of her parents and their reaction. My parents, on the other hand, I guess they started hearing stuff around the same time. Not my dad, though. He's kind of like me. He's just oblivious to stuff. And my mom's a high school teacher at Wilk Central. So it, you know, hopped the teacher train over to another school, you know. Teachers like to talk, I guess. And my mom took me out to dinner one time, and it just so happened that another teacher walked in this restaurant whose daughter is, let me get this straight, whose daughter is best friends with the only openly gay kid at that time at Wilk Central. And so she used that, I guess, to start talking about it. And she was like, oh, you know, Leslie's out at Wilk Central, and everybody knows about it. And I heard that you are hanging out with her girlfriend, Selena. And I was like, that's true. Selena plays on my soccer team. She's a great soccer player. We have a lot in common, you know. She's just fun to hang around with. And I was like, yeah, she's a cool girl. And I was like, well, aren't you worried that that people will start thinking that you're one of them? I'm like, you know, I guess some people might think that. And it hadn't really crossed my mind. And I was just like, huh, well, oh well, if they do. I didn't care. And mom, I guess she didn't know what else to say after that. She just got really serious and was very unhappy for the rest of the evening. And that marked a long process with my mother that is still going on to this day, of this back and forth about my sexuality. And I've gone to great lengths with both of my parents. And it's tough with my mom, especially. Like, I guess it's an image thing with her, especially being a teacher. She just retired, so maybe it'll get better with her. But my dad's done a lot better with it. At first, he was really upset, and he told me that that he wouldn't stand for it and that he couldn't support me if I were gay. And I said, oh, well, I'm not gay because I need your money. So I just kind of lied and went with it. And then I came to college, and it got to a point where I just couldn't keep going without my parents knowing. And so what I did, it was just two Christmases ago, I think, I bought this book called Straight Parents, Gay Children.
It's sitting right behind you.
Yes, it is. This book, right here. And I bought a copy for each of them. And I went through the book, and I marked and highlighted and wrote specific things, specific for each parent, because my parents are divorced. It's totally different situations for them. So, and I would write specific things that happened between me and them, and issues that I was having. And then I wrote a separate letter on top of that, specific for the parent, saying, basically saying, you know, how hard it is for me to be closeted, and I just want to be who I am, and I wish they would accept it. And now the bottom line is that I love them, and I know that this secret is alienating us, and I didn't want that. I wanted them to be an active part of my life, basically. And then I made them this really cheesy CD of like songs about families and relationships, you know, between parent and children, and wrapped it all up and hid them in the back of their Christmas trees so that when they were cleaning up Christmas, they would find it. And because I didn't want it to, you know, be a big deal at Christmas, you know, so that worked out really well with my dad. It really impacted him, and to this day, if you ask him about it, he'll cry. And I think it was just a big wake-up call for him. And you know, now he's great. He came to Saga, to the Sexuality and Gender Alliance. He came to Parents Day, made everybody cry that night, and he talks about it. He knows that my plans are to go off with my girlfriend and to make a life together, and he's probably the most supportive person in my family.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a good story, right?
Yeah, that is. What has been the larger community's response to your coming out in I'm talking about in Rhonda?
Oh, that's a place I avoid. I don't go back home. My dad lives there. My mom lives in another county. She lives in Alexander County now. And I know it hurts my dad's feelings that I don't go back, but it's hard for me to go back, specifically because of the memories of coming out, and especially related to how I was treated by my ex-girlfriend and her family. It's like, if I go home, it's just like this rush of memories about it, and it's painful for me. So I don't go home a lot, but I try to keep in touch with other people in other ways, and I know that my being gay is more widely known now than it was. And also, I really believe more accepted than it was in high school, especially among my peers. Because there's been a few people that I've talked about it kind of just because I was just tired of making up whatever lie, and was shocked at how supportive they were, especially compared to how they treated me in high school. Just this week, I was on Facebook, and there was this girl, specifically, who had gotten upset with me because I was hanging around her boyfriend, and at that, like, the same time I started hanging around him, he broke up with her. And honestly, he might have had a little crush on me. I don't really know. Like I said, I'm oblivious and stuff like that. And so she was really upset with me in high school and, like, stopped talking to me. And she was a cheerleader and had her whole little cheerleader posse mad at me, and it was just like a nightmare. All these people were so mad, and I'm like, what did I do? I don't know what I did. It was bad, and it was one of those things that I subconsciously held on to, you know. And I saw her on Facebook, and I'm like, I feel like this is something I need to let go. And so I messaged her, and I'm like, you know, I'm sorry. I don't think I really handled things so well back then, and I just wanted to tell you that I'm a lesbian, and I never had anything for your boyfriend. They're married now. They're still together, so I didn't know what she would say. I had no idea, but she wrote me back, and she was like, you know, I think about that all the time and how stupid we were in high school and how jealous everybody gets over the smallest things. And she said, people would tell me obvious lies about stuff they saw y'all doing, and I would know it's not true, but I would still get upset. And she was so apologetic, and she was like, I know it must have been hard for you to be a lesbian in high school, and I don't blame you for not coming out as much, you know. And she was so supportive, and, you know, as the, you know, perfect blonde cheerleader girl, I did not expect that. But I'm proud of my community for supporting me as well as they have.
Cool. One of the questions that I like to ask is, how has living in a rural Appalachian area affected your sexuality development and how you behave as well?
Yeah, I think as far as identity goes, and you know, that's all it really boils down to is your identity. And I identify as a mountaineer, as an Appalachian, a person from the Appalachian Mountains, before I identify as lesbian. And you know, like, growing up in the rural North Carolina area, it just, it's more important to me, I guess. And like, I really identify, I play bluegrass music. I love it. I love the culture. I love the mountains. I love everything there is about being from this area. And it's been something interesting for me to watch out in my life of how my sexuality has interacted with that. And in some cases, it's been kind of hard. And in a lot of cases, not really. I think the most difficult thing about it is just around here, we don't talk about it, I guess, as much. And when I was a kid, like I said, I didn't know what a lesbian was. It seemed like everybody knew but me, and my household, and in just my smaller community where I grew up in Roy River, I did not know about this stuff. So I think if I had grown up in a more urban place, then I would have known, and it wouldn't have been so hard for me to come to terms with.
What about how you behave with your girlfriends in the past and now that you're at a, not necessarily an urban university, but you're at Appalachian State University, which has long-term gay organizations, LGBT organizations that have been in existence for quite some time?
Yeah. So when I had my girlfriend in high school, there was no PDAs at all, and often we would go somewhere and she would end up flirting with random guys just to make it look like we weren't together, and would really hurt my feelings. I hated it, and I'm like, I can't live this life anymore. It's painful. It's hurtful. And so when I applied to college, I applied to college for the specific purpose of finding an environment where I could be myself. I didn't even care what I majored in. I just wanted to be myself and be happy. And so I applied to Appalachian and I applied to Wilmington. And my reasoning with Wilmington was it was very far away from where I was from. It was the farthest I could get in North Carolina. And so I thought, that would be helpful. And then with Appalachian, I think it was actually the girl from my soccer team who told me that they have a really great gay population up here, and that's a great environment for gay people. So I was like, well, okay. And I got into both, and I think really I was just impressed, that I knew that I was going to be in a safe place. So that's why I came here, was so that I could stop that nonsense of pretending to be something I'm not. And so from day one, when I came to college, I was Kelly Lesbian. That was my new last name. And I've pretty much just, I've made it my life, I remember the first weekend we had Club Expo, and I grabbed my roommate, who's gay, or she's bisexual, actually, and my best friend, who's gay boy and bisexual girl, each hand, and I both knew them from my hometown, and I drug them into the Club Expo and straight to the saga table, and I'm like, this is it, this is our new home, here we are, we're finally in our place. And I signed up, and I've only missed 2 days of saga since. Like, I love it. I just, not only am I out and proud now, and I'm not afraid to show PDAs, but I want everyone else to be like that too. And I want to dedicate my life to, helping people get through it and to claim it, to own it.
Since you brought that up, we'll just segue that way. You have been active in SAGA, as well as you attend Transaction, the student organization for transgender issues. Could you talk about what each one is, and how did you get involved with Transaction? And we'll move into other aspects of your leadership roles.
Okay. SAGA, this is the Sexuality and Gender Alliance. Let's see, it used to be Be Glad, but this was before me. And back then there wasn't a Transaction, and I think the deal was with Be Glad is it wasn't inclusive of trans people. So they changed the SAGA, but I guess the damage had already been done. And so now there's a Transaction and a SAGA. And in the last 3 semesters, I've been an officer of SAGA. And it's interesting to me that all the Transaction people still come to SAGA. It's like they have their separate thing, but they're still with us. So I think that's nice, and I wish that more people from Saga could reciprocate and show up the transaction, but I guess that does make for a very long Thursday. I can't claim that I'm really that active in transactions. Saga is my priority. I'm an officer there. I support transaction and I support trans issues, but I can't claim so much from transaction. But in Saga, we do so much in Saga. I guess especially since I've been an officer, our big goal is education, because I really feel that that's the only way to move forward is to educate people. And so all of our meetings have some educational point to them, and some almost academic, really, area of discussion. And we bring performers and speakers. We just had these two guys that are trans rappers. They're rappers. That's weird to say. I don't like rap music, but these two trans guys that they do like spoken word and poetry and rap and stuff, and they did workshops about being transgender, and we do our drag shows. We have an amateur drag show coming up on Saturday, and then we have a professional one later. It's just always some kind of project to raise awareness and visibility, really.
What are some examples of the different educational, like the scope of what type of programs the weekly meeting has?
Okay. The first meeting, which actually got snowed out, but I was running it, I was going to talk about what to do if you get cut off from your parents, which is the number one excuse I hear when people say that they don't want to come out, is that they're afraid that they won't get any more money from their parents and then they'll have to quit school. So I came up with my 5-step plan on like what to do if that happens. So that was one thing. We had, Ashley did a transgender meeting. So we had like a few people from Transaction come in and talk about how to be a good transgender ally, because not everyone in the gay community is. What else? We talk about so many things. We've done history meetings talking about just queer history in general from Stonewall on, whatever, or before even. I did a meeting last semester, which I really had fun with, not just about gay marriage and its laws, but how to put on a gay marriage, like how to have one. And we kind of had like a mock wedding, and that was a lot of fun. And just like, God, anything you could think of, we talked about it, really. Just religion, we had a meeting on religion, which is, a constant thing that comes up in Saga. We're going to have a meeting just about activism and just about how to get out there and help change the world. I'm looking forward to that one.
Since you brought that up, some of the comments that I've heard about Saga is that it's more of a social group than a activist group. Could you talk about some of that balance act that you have to have with Saga?
It's definitely a balancing act. And I was VP of activism for a year, for two semesters, and it was very, very difficult. I think it is the hardest job that Saga has, hardest office. And the problem with it is that, we're all just a bunch of young kids here, and I'm guilty of it. When I signed up my freshman year, I'm like, oh, I'm going to find a new girlfriend, and I guess it's hard to avoid the social aspect of it because we are on a college campus, because we are still young people, and a lot of us aren't really thinking far enough ahead yet. Definitely the seniors are now. We're like, oh, we're leaving, we're leaving this great gay world that we're in. What are we going to do? We're so scared. But especially with the freshmen and the sophomores, it's, it is a social thing. And that's, it's okay because we need it. We need that. I needed that support when I came here. That was what really struck me about Saga, was that it was a place where I could go, where I could be totally safe, and I could say anything that was on my heart, And I think it's important that it's a social group, but we try to keep that activism at least in their minds, just pushing it, just saying, hey, you know, this stuff is really happening. And I think once they leave Saga, you know, once they're done with college, they'll think more about it. You'll think, oh man, I remember what Kelly said that one meeting. Now I'm really worried about this issue. We gotta get out there and vote and donate money to the HRC and do stuff. So it's a big balance.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about the size of Saga? Because there's a rumor going through the university that it is the largest student organization on campus. And I was wondering, one, if you knew whether that was true or not, but also what is the size of Saga?
Yeah, I had not heard that it was the largest organization, but here's the problem with that, is that with Saga, we don't take role, you know, there's no, you know, members really, and it's not just for people from ASU. We let anybody who's open-minded and who's supportive to come. Like, I have a lot of friends from my high school that don't go to school here that come every Thursday. And the other side of it is that we have a lot of people on this campus who associate themselves with Saga that don't come every Thursday. And I don't count them out. I think they are part of Saga, even though they don't show up, because I know their heart's in it, you know. And even if their schedules don't go, on Facebook, that's kind of what we're going with, because we don't have like a roster of school. But we have a Facebook group that we use for logistical purposes. And the last time I checked, we had 178 people in that Facebook group. But, you know, that, like I said, that's people that have graduated, that never went to ASU, or just come because they like it. And then there's people who wouldn't sign up for that group, you know, because they don't want to be outed. So there's really no way to get the exact number. But I will say that I've been surprised at times with the amount of people that we've packed in that room. Let's see, I know...
Which room are you talking about?
The Strickland Conference Room in IG Greer, on the second floor. It's where we always have our meetings, Thursdays at 8. And... last semester, see, our fall semesters, we usually get more people in, because it's just a new school year. People are excited to get out.
And no snow.
No snow, yeah. But our Saga Social, which is, you know, the first meeting that we have last semester, was packed. There were, we all kept counting different numbers. Not adding too much.
So you, at the social for 2009, were counting numbers?
Yeah, and all the officers got different numbers, but I think like the highest number that somebody counted was in the 130s, and the lowest was like 110. So it was, you know, 110 plus people in this, like, I mean, it's a conference room, so it's pretty big, but we were packed in there. I was shocked at the support, and it felt good to see that many people there.
What do you see as the greatest successes of Saga since you have been involved with it?
Oh, goodness. Our greatest success is our drag show. I mean, if you go down there and ask legends, they'll tell you, you know, we make a killing off of it. Everybody comes. Like, it's just not just Saga. It's just... everybody wants to go to the drag show. If you're gay or straight, it doesn't matter. We get straight guys. Almost every drag show, they incorporate that into the routine, and they'll ask how many straight guys were there, and I'm always just shocked. And it's just, it seems kind of silly to say that that's our biggest accomplishment, but we put a lot of time and effort into it, and I think it's important for our visibility, because so many people on campus go, and they see, you know, it's gay people, they're great, they're having a great time, this is so fun. So, I think our drag show is our best contribution there.
What would you say are your challenges to have the organization working as you want it to be? What are the challenges to the organization?
Oh, there's a lot of challenges. It's tough. I didn't realize how hard it was going to be when I ran for office. I don't think anyone ever does. Well, we're talking about the numbers. It's tough because there's so many people and you don't know who's going to show up or what size of a group will show up. You have to do a considerable amount of planning ahead, especially if it's like you're a meeting and you're running the meeting that night. You never know who's going to show up and what's going to happen. As an officer, this seems kind of silly, and I think this happens in any organization, but I've had to deal a lot with personal problems within the group, people's exes and whatnot, and people's just past experiences with each other kind of clash, and we've had to talk to some people at the meetings and settle that issue. That was kind of the scariest thing that I've had to deal with, was people being mad at each other, and I think it got to the point where like somebody had like put a restraining order on somebody. That was our biggest challenge, I think, but other than that, just keeping everything organized, because we really do a lot. We have an amateur and a professional drag, two drag shows every semester, and we have a big trip. So in the fall, we all go to Pride, the North Carolina Pride Parade, for a weekend. It's kind of hard to get a group of people who are like, you don't even know who's going to show up. So it's hard to get people committed and involved in that. And then in the spring, we go to Unity, which is in Chapel Hill, and they have workshops and stuff. And so it's just every weekend we do something else. And there's always there's a holiday, there's a coming out day that we do, Transgender Day of Remembrance, Day of Silence. It's just every week we have to plan some big event, and just the organization of doing all that, like, it feels like a full-time job.
I wanted to talk to you about your academic work, because you are going to be graduating with the LGBT studies minor, which is brand new this semester. Could you talk about the classes that you've had? Not necessarily the dirt, but what types of classes?
Sure.
And how those have been for you.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that I'm the first person getting that minor. I care a lot about it, and I've loved my classes. I've loved them. Those were the only classes that I really cared about. They were just, those are the ones classes where I wanted to read. I'm like, oh yes, we've got 7 books in this class. But the first one I took was Intro to LGBT Studies with Professor Jill Enan. And that was early on. I guess I was a sophomore, so it was kind of early on. And I was just blown away that we could have a class where we're talking about this stuff, and it's just like we feel like we're talking about our everyday lives. But it was neat to me to be able to relate so much to what I'm studying. And in that class, we talked about everything. We kind of went over like a LGBT history, learning about as far back as like the Greeks. The Greeks that slept together, and all the way up to today. And we talked about media. We talked about that a lot, how we're portrayed in the media. And we read a couple of novels about being gay and being trans. And then I took Sex, Health, and AIDS with Dr. Orvis, and it was kind of a nice switch up, because it wasn't as broad. And obviously, it wasn't just about being gay. It was about AIDS, So it was a lot about being gay, but it was more, I guess, the class was all about the stigma of AIDS. So that was interesting. And it was fun to be in that class because it counts as a women's studies class. So there were a lot of people in there that weren't in there for the same reasons as me. And I was one of the few gay people in there, and so I guess I had an interesting contribution. I always had students after class telling me that they were really glad I was in there to get, you know, a gay perspective, I guess, on the situation. And then right now I am in queer theory, which is under the philosophy department with Dr. Kim Hall, and this one's different because I'm not a philosophy person at all. I'm a psych major, and we're very concise and to the point. And philosophy is talking about all these crazy theories and stuff that's way over my head, but it's interesting, and it's made me rethink things. Like, for example, we're talking about essentialism, and like, are you born gay, or do you come into it? And from the queer perspective, you're not born gay, it's a choice. And that was, I guess, kind of a eye-opener for me. Even now, I feel like I have all this stuff down pat, but that class has been interesting so far. It's challenged some of my thinking of my own self, even. Those are the main LGBT classes.
And you're going to be graduating and possibly moving away from Appalachia completely. How do you expect your life to be different in living in potentially a more metropolitan type of a setting?
Yeah, I can't wait to move to the city. I really can't. I need that experience. I don't know if I'll stay there, because, like, I mean, my heart is here in the mountains, and back on the farm. That's kind of where I feel like I belong, but I'm excited to move to a city just to have the experience. And as a gay person, especially, just to like see it in a different way. Maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking probably wherever I go it's going to be more open and just have more options. And like I don't know, what will they have, like gay knitting groups? I don't know what they have in the city, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they have to offer me as a lesbian, especially.
Was there anything else that you would like to talk about? A special anecdote that you would like recorded?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about my thesis at all.
Go ahead.
I don't know. It's kind of similar to yours, I guess. I'm doing kind of a climate of North Carolina for LGBT people, and I'm interviewing like specific stories that related to big issues. So I'm having somebody that's talking about being discriminated against in the workplace, somebody that got beat up for being gay, and somebody who wants to get married, and somebody else who had trouble with bullying in high school. So I think that'll, if I could get people to watch it, I mean, I can't make people watch it, but if I could get people to watch it, I think it'll, it could make a big impression on people. And I mean, I just feel myself that, I feel like I'm really lucky to have gone to Appalachian in this time where I can study LGBT stuff and I can do my thesis on this. And it's a privilege, I think, an honor to be doing what I'm doing.